KaiserNetwork.org.
Resources, even though these are diseases that with relatively little money, relatively little attention, could get solved and could be eradicated from the world. What are we talking about here? We're talking about bacterial and parasitic diseases that include things like hookworm, snail fever, river blindness, leprosy, trachoma, intestinal worms, things that we may have seen in our country or in some of your other countries years and years ago, but that have been eradicated but are still plaguing so much of the developing world. 1 billion people now suffering from these diseases, more than 2 billion at risk, and it's costing billions, if not trillions, of dollars to the global economy. What struck me about this and what really hit me is a paradox at the heart of this problem. These diseases can be treated for almost no money, 40 cents, 50 cents a year, compared to $200 a year for HIV/AIDS. Yet because it's so inexpensive to treat them, it's not in the interest of the big pharmaceutical companies to come up with the treatments because it's just not economically viable. So that we want to get it. That's one of the things we want to address today. And we really don't have, we couldn't have a better panel for this. First of all, of course, President Jimmy Carter, the 39th President of the United States, and who for the last generation now has, in the Carter Center, been dedicating his own time and been focusing the attention of the world on so many different problems, but especially this problem of neglected diseases. And we were just talking for a couple of minutes before we came out here. The president's efforts on guinea worm have eliminated this disease in 99.7%. Of the world. There's only a tiny group left still suffering from this disease. I'm also joined by Dr. Sam Zaramba, right here, the Director General of Health Services in Uganda. He's entrusted with the health of 26 million people. Uganda was one of the first countries to recognize how much of a threat these neglected diseases pose to developing nations. And in 2003, it launched a model snail fever eradication program that has treated over 3.6 million people. Finally, Dr. Peter Hotez, the president of the Sabine Vaccine Institute and the chair of the Global Network for Neglected Tropical Disease Control at George Washington University. He's perhaps best known for his creation of an experimental vaccine to prevent hookworm-related malnutrition and anemia. And he has spent his career highlighting these programs. And as you'll see, he knows more about it than just about anyone else in the world and can't wait to tell you about it. But let me begin with you, President Carter. Let's take a big question, a step back from the start. Why, in your mind, you've been studying these now for more than 25 years, why has this cluster of diseases been neglected?
Well, what the Carter Center does is to deal with issues and major problems that are not being addressed by others. And when you start talking about onchocerciasis or dracunculiasis or lymphatic filariasis,
I can't even pronounce it. Go ahead.
Well, you see people's eyes cloud over. But the fact is that these diseases are afflicting literally hundreds of millions of people in the most devastating way. For instance, the first time I ever saw guinea worm was in a little village in Ghana. I went to several villages and three-fourths of the total population were afflicted with guinea worm. So they couldn't walk, and they couldn't go to school, they couldn't go to the field to cultivate their crop. The first most memorable vision of guinea worm I saw was a young, beautiful woman who was holding her breast in her arm. I thought she was holding her baby, but her breast was swollen up, and a guinea worm was coming out of the nipple of her breast. And she later found that she had 11 other guinea worms emerging from her body. The guinea worm is caused by drinking filthy water, and later the worm develops about 30 inches long, and it takes 30 days to come out of the human body. So that whole village was afflicted, and there were 3.5 million cases of guinea worm we found the first year in 22 different nations across the continent of Africa and in Asia, and we now have reduced it down to, as you say, 0.3%. In fact, except for Ghana and Sudan, we only have 60 cases of guinea worm left in the world. It's likely to be the next disease to be eradicated. We had another disease called river blindness that exists all over Africa. It's called onchocerciasis, and in six nations in Latin America. And we began to treat onchocerciasis. Last year, we treated, the Carter Center did, 11.5 million people with a free medicine that Merck gives us so that people won't go blind. And this is a practically unknown disease in this country. Schistosomiasis is another disease. It's a horrible disease. And lymphatic filariasis is elephantiasis, where arms and legs and sexual organs swell up. So these kind of problems are very pertinent. And what the Carter Center does is we let the local people do their own work. We only send in one expert per nation. And the nation of Uganda, for instance, and the nations, we have 35 countries in Africa. They do their own work. And the thing that the overwhelming sense is the need is great. The knowledge in the developed world, the rich world, is not there. And the people are suffering horribly, and they can do their own work. And the last thing I'll say is that what we have found is that the people in Africa who are suffering so much are just as intelligent, just as hardworking, just as ambitious, and their family values are just as good as ours. They just need a chance to correct their own problem.
Let me just follow up before I go on to Dr. Hotez. When you first decided at the Carter Center to look at these neglected diseases, could you figure out, as you were looking at them, why they hadn't gotten more attention, either from the local governments or from the developed world?
Well, fortunately for the Carter Center, we are next door to the Centers for Disease Control. So we had experts from CDC, when they found out that I was interested in it, that came over and put all of these burdens on our shoulder. These are things that are not being done by anybody else. Will the Carter Center take them on? So having been president, what I can do is to go to a country, meet with the president of that nation or the king or prime minister, and instead of just working with the Minister of Health, I can work with the leader of the nation and all the whole cabinet, including the Minister of Health and Transportation and Finance and Education and so forth. So we can kind of get the top level of government to deal with these sometimes remote diseases that even the leaders in that country don't know about. So that's how we got involved in a wide range of neglected diseases.
Dr. Hotez, you've heard President Carter talk about guinea worm, about river blindness, but why don't you give us all an education now in the kinds of what we're talking about when we talk about neglected tropical diseases.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Before I do that, I just wanted to thank the Clinton Foundation for this opportunity. I've been working on vaccines for neglected tropical diseases such as hookworm for 25 years, and if you had told me back then that I could be sitting in this venue with President Carter and George Stephanopoulos and Dr. Zaremba, I would have said this is some kind of adolescent fantasy. And so
it doesn't turn into a nightmare, but go ahead.
So I'm very grateful. I'm grateful to Chris Jennings, Chris Dodd, Sarah Richland for this incredible chance. So what we're talking about are a group of 13 parasitic and bacterial infections. As you mentioned, many of you may never have even heard of these diseases. They go by very fanciful names, such as three protozoan infections, Kala-Azar, Chagas disease, African sleeping sickness, a group of worm infections, hookworm, guinea worm, river blindness, schistosomiasis, lymphatic filariasis or elephantiasis, and three very important bacterial infections, Borrelia ulcer, leprosy, and trachoma. And now you might say, well, what could these infections have in common? Well, what they are chronic and disabling conditions that are the exclusive purview of the estimated 2.7 billion people who live on less than $2 a day. Only these people get these diseases. So it's not even like AIDS or TB, which are very important, not only in the developing world, but in North America and Europe. These only occur among the very, very poorest people in low-income countries of sub-Saharan Africa, South America, and Asia, and especially sub-Saharan Africa. And they have very long-term important effects. So, for example, hookworm infection. What that has the ability to do, hookworms are centimeter-long parasites, about this big, that attach to the intestine and suck blood out of the intestine, so that children who are chronically infected with these worms lose about a teaspoon of blood per day. So they suffer from chronic anemia. And the chronic anemia, now we have excellent evidence to show that chronic anemia will directly lower your child's IQ and will directly stunt physical and growth. So they are impairing intellectual and cognitive development. A University of Chicago economist recently estimated that chronic hookworm infection in the childhood will reduce his future wage-earning capacity by 50%. So in terms, these are not only important health problems, but they're also very important economic problems. So we're talking about $49 to $50 billion a year lost from hookworm alone. And then you have there are also important causes of blindness, so trachoma, river blindness, onchocerciasis will cause chronic blindness. Usually it'll occur, in the case of river blindness, among someone who's the breadwinner in the family. So you'll see in these sub-Saharan African villages, people who are led around by a stick by their child or grandchild when they should be at the height of their wage-earning capacity being led around. And probably the most pathetic of them all is lymphatic filariasis, which causes this horrible and very painful disfiguring deformation of the lower limb and the scrotum and other genital organs, so that these people become ostracized by their community. They can't even go seek medical attention because their families are too horrified to even bring these individuals out into the sunlight. And yet we have now an incredible opportunity to control all of these diseases. Notice that I didn't say anything in particular about death. Yes, they do kill about 530,000 people a year, but that's not their impact. Their impact is more subtle.
I want to stop before you get to the opportunity because I want to get to that in a minute. But first, let me ask Dr. Zaramba, share with us your personal experience in Uganda. You've been working very hard on snail fever, but also a cluster of other problems. And I wonder if you could address particularly the interconnection between these diseases and extreme poverty.
Thank you very much. First of all, it is an honor for me to be on this panel with President Carter. And I want everybody to join me to salute President Carter for the wonderful work he has done on neglected diseases. As he has told you, these diseases afflict the poorest of the poor. And quite often, as I said, you go to a country, I'm at headquarters, I may not know of an affliction in part of the country. And the disease affects those that cannot help themselves. And the whole range, it's the children, the adults, the women, the men are affected. And as Peter said, these are disabling diseases. And sometimes people have come to accept them as part of the norm. You can't believe it. If you look at a disease like bilharzia, in some communities, the communities have come to accept that it's part of development. That a man at one time or another, if you have got urinary bilharzia, at one time or another, you also have to menstruate, meaning that you are going to pass blood in your urine, and is accepted. But you get to a point as you grow up, your tummy must come forward, must have pot belly. It's accepted. So it's a real pity that we still have these diseases in the developing world, diseases we call biblical diseases. These are things that some of you could have read in the Bible,
right,
that there are used to be ABCD. Now, these diseases have caused untold poverty in Africa. They afflict the active adults, as you have heard. Chronic anemia itself is disabling enough to make you incapable of being productive. So it has contributed, neglected diseases have contributed immensely to poverty in Africa. And because they are silent, both we who live in Africa and those who come in have literally forgotten all about them. We take them as the norm. And that's why I praise President Carter for having had the vision to come in and support
us. But you didn't take it as the norm in Uganda. How did you address it? How did you attack it?
Now, coming to what we did, I personally, having been a clinician and having seen some of these diseases, I convinced my friends in the ministry that we have to do things in a different way. The fact that they are not supported, they are not funded, said we must do something to ensure that we peg them on those programs that are well funded. And the best example was the immunization programs. We have had a number of campaigns, particularly on the eradication of polio, and as everybody knows, polio has had a lot of support world over. We have had a reactivation of elimination of measles all over the world. So we said that since we cannot get extra funding for some of these neglected diseases, why don't we peg the treatment on these campaigns so that we have an integrated service delivery during the campaigns? And what we did, we said, fine, we have some support for elimination of soil-transmitted hermetics, that's a hookworm and others. We have got some funding for lymphatic filariasis. We have got a bit of funding for onchocerciasis. So let's cut out, we decided to cut out the programs at the same time because we are talking of mass drug distribution in the communities. And I can tell you that quite a number of our supporters were not happy with the exercise because they thought we are going to submerge the programs, especially like immunization. But at the end of the day, we were able to convince them that there is synergy if we are to work together. And indeed, at the end of the day, we had more coverages of immunization by including these neglected diseases.
And we'd like to get into more of those synergies. I should ask all of you, if you have any questions for the panel, we're going to be coming back after your tabletop discussions. Please give them to your facilitators at the table. They'll put them into the computer, and we'll try to get to those in the next session. President Carter, I was struck when you mentioned that you learned about this from the CDC. You had been president of the United States. The CDC worked for you when you're president of the United States. Why haven't these diseases gotten more attention at the federal level, and what are the prospects for that right now?
Well, the problem with many of these diseases is they don't afflict, even in developing nations, the elite people who live in the capital cities, who run the government and that sort of thing. They are in the most remote parts of the most undeveloped countries. For instance, guinea worm itself, we had to go into almost 24,000 individual villages to teach the village leaders what causes guinea worm and get them to correct their own problem. That's one very serious effect of it. And the other one is that quite often, as you just heard from the minister, the poorest people are the ones that suffer from all this whole gamut of neglected diseases. So as we have learned how to deal with guinea worm, we've also learned a lot about lymphatic filariasis, schistosomiasis, and trachoma that exist in the same community. So we sometimes, the Carter Center goes into the villages, into the homes, get to know the problems, and then we share what we learn quite often with ministers of health in the capital cities. So we formed a kind of a gamut of continuity between the central government of a country, 35 of them in Africa, down to the village and into the homes. Another very serious problem is that, say, onchocerciasis, which is a very serious blindness disease, river blindness, we get free medicine from Merck and Company, which I don't know how much it costs Merck, but they give it to us all we want. We've now handed out 83 million doses of the free medicine since we started getting it, about 11 million a year. But to get that free medicine from the shipping point into the interior and in somebody's mouth is a tremendous undertaking. And that's what the Carter Center does. We actually go into the villages and we put the medicine in the mouth because you can't just send it in. Because if a person has river blindness with horrible itching and sores on the back and discoloration of the skin, knowing they're going to get blind, they would rather have that tablet than a diamond of the same size. So that tablet is extremely valuable. We have to actually put it in people's mouths. And that's a very difficult thing to marshal, you know, in London or in Washington or in, even in the Scandinavian countries that are very strongly inclined toward benevolence. So the incubation of the idea, the commitment to it, and the public awareness that I can bring as a former president, I think has been very valuable. And I've learned a lot in the process, too, of course.
And Dr. Hotez, you now believe, as you were saying earlier, that we're perhaps at a unique moment that presents an opportunity to eradicate many of these diseases.
Yes, it's absolutely right. It's actually it's a fascinating story, which I'll have to abbreviate because of time, but it's one where actually the drug companies are, in a sense, the good guys in this. Because what happened, it started out in the 1970s. Merck and Company had discovered a drug for parasitic worms called ivermectin, which goes by the trade name of Mectazan. They developed this not because of human disease, but because worms of sheep and cattle are a $1 billion-a-year industry.
And dogs. Don't forget dogs. And so they made this veterinary product. They had it on the shelf. They were making something like 10% of their sales from this veterinary product. And then it came to light that this drug was very effective at reducing the number of circulating microfilaria that caused lymphatic filariasis, elephantiasis, as well as having a huge effect on reducing and preventing blindness from river blindness, from onchocerciasis. And it was then that Roy Vagelos, who I'm sure you must know well, the president and CEO of Merck, actually championed the idea that he was going to give this drug away free of charge to as many people who need them. Because obviously these people don't have two nickels to rub together in order to purchase it. They're making their billions on the veterinary product. Let's give it away. The result of that has been extraordinary. Onchocerciasis has been eliminated in 18 countries in West Africa. The Carter Center has had an important role at that. But it didn't stop there because Pfizer then stepped up and took a drug for azithromycin, Zithromax, that they make equal amount of money because otitis media, ear infections among our kids, are also a $1 billion-a-year industry in the United States. But guess what? It has an important impact on preventing blindness from trachoma. The CEO of Pfizer mandated that it be given away. Same with GSK with a drug called albendazole, and the only one that we've not been able to persuade to donate yet is Bayer to give away a drug called praziquantel. So the drugs are free. Now, you can argue that, well, the flip side of this is that drug companies are never going to take research and development on new drugs, and that's why for our hookworm vaccine we have to develop it in the nonprofit sector, but I'll save that for later. But the point is now the drugs are free. And so in the last 4 to 5 years, I've been working with Professor Fenwick from Imperial College London, who's in the audience, with David Molyneux at the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine, with Frank Richards from the Carter Center. And we've started looking at maps of the world's picture of neglected tropical diseases and realized that, guess what, these neglected tropical diseases are not occurring in isolation. They're occurring in clusters so that people who live in these very poorest countries are polyparasitized. What that means is if you swoop down into one of the villages where the Carter Center goes to, you might see the same child infected with ascaris worms, hookworms, whipworms, possibly even schistosomiasis, and maybe at the beginning stages of lymphatic filariasis. So that there were a number of public-private partnerships that were developed in association with the pharmaceutical industry that was now implementing the individual donated drugs for each of their individual diseases. But by harmonizing these public-private partnerships in a new network that we've recently established called the Global Network for Neglected Tropical Disease Control, sorry, it's got a complicated name, GNNTDC, what we could do now is deliver this in a rapid impact package, as we call it. So four drugs. Albendazole or Mabendazole, and you could use either of the two, one from GSK, one donated by J&J, praziquantel, Mectizan from Merck, and Zithromax from Pfizer. The drugs are free. We can now administer these to control or eliminate seven neglected tropical diseases simultaneously for 50 cents a person. So what we're saying is that for 50 cents a person, we could, because these neglected tropical diseases in aggregate produce a disease burden that's equivalent, almost equivalent to HIV/AIDS and as equivalent to malaria, TB. But for 50 cents a person, we can almost equal that impact by simultaneously controlling.
And then what are we talking about in aggregate? What would be the cost annually?
The cost, for instance, for
Sub-Saharan Africa, if you were to package and transport this cluster of drugs.
Right. Oh, by the way, the 50 cents is all for delivery costs because the drugs are free. We've been able to do this in association with public-private partnerships that are already working on the ground in those regions. So, for instance, the Schistosomiasis Control Initiative, working in six African countries, the International Trachoma Initiative, working in multiple African countries, the Global Alliance to Eliminate LF, again working, and the African Program for Onchocerciasis Control. The costs thus far have been 50 cents. In some cases, it's gone up to 79 cents a person, but that's the range. So that, in theory, if you could continue to scale this up, what we're talking about is the simultaneous control or elimination for 500 million people in sub-Saharan Africa at risk
for these neglected tropical diseases for about approximately $200 million, $200 to $250 million a year, which sounds like a lot of money, but when you look at the impact...
It doesn't sound like a lot at all, actually. No. Dr. Zaramba, if you know, we have a group of fairly powerful people here, but also if you pretend you're in the Oval Office right now and you could ask the president for one thing to help you do your job in Uganda, what would you ask the president of the American people for?
There are so many things I would ask. But as far as neglected diseases are concerned, I would want the president to put neglected diseases on the front. Because talking about these other diseases, as you said, by the time HIV/AIDS comes in, the patient is already compromised. I mean, if he's anemic, then HIV/AIDS will just take over. If it gets to malaria itself, an anemic patient succumbs to malaria very easily. So what would I ask? I'd ask the President of America to make sure that everybody supports these neglected diseases so that if a package comes, like my friends in HIV/AIDS, they should always remember that there is a disease that is going to that is making the condition of the patient they are treating worse. And ensure that we have integrated disease management. Like we are talking yesterday, unless we support the systems of our government to look at the entire system, the human resource, the infrastructure, the provision, the logistics, making sure that these tablets get to the pool, to the those who deserve them, we cannot succeed. So I would wish to see everybody supporting the entire chain of service delivery and keep remembering that neglected diseases, much as they were eliminated in the first world, they are still a big problem in the developing world. A big, big problem, as President Carter said.
Okay, it's now time. We're just about ready to turn over to our tabletop discussion. So I want to call up Daniel Stone of America Speaks to instruct everyone, I guess, into how to go through the next half hour.
All right, thanks very much. So we have now heard from our esteemed panel their knowledge, their ideas, and their experiences about this very serious issue of neglected tropical diseases. They've told us how serious the impact is of these diseases. They've also told us that largely this impact is due to a level of neglect about these diseases by the countries in which they are prevalent as well as in the international community. So we now want to engage you in the conversation and to take advantage of the wealth of ideas and expertise that resides in this room. So we want to have a table group conversation for the next half hour. And we want to engage you in a question. And the question we would like you to talk about at your tables is, what types of incentives would encourage industry, NGOs, and governments to more aggressively develop new approaches and therapies to prevent or treat neglected tropical diseases? And again, as you have your discussion, your facilitator will lead you through it, will capture your thoughts. They'll all be sent forward to our theme team, and we will be feeding back to you the results of the entire room's thoughts after our panel reconvenes in about half an hour. So have a great discussion, and we'll see you in half an hour.
Chris Jennings, our group chair, is compiling all the work you did at the tabletop discussions. But in the meantime, we want to address some of the questions you all had for the panel. And let me begin, Dr. Hortez, with you. We talked about the diseases that had treatments that were relatively inexpensive. But I wonder if you could talk for just a couple of minutes about those that the diseases that may require more expensive treatments that may not have been developed yet, and how do we create the incentives to get those drugs produced?
Sure. You know, the drugs that we're proposing to use in this integrated manner for the so-called rapid impact package are the drugs that we have in hand today. And so what we feel is that there's a moral obligation to do the very best we can maximizing the use of these drugs, which are available, which are donated, which could be easily used, which are generally safe. Now, this doesn't mean that these drugs are going to solve all of the problems for neglected tropical diseases. So, for instance, while we think these drugs will be very useful for the future elimination of lymphatic filariasis or river blindness, we know that because of high rates of reinfection and possible concerns about drug resistance, the drugs may not do the job, will probably not do the job for eliminating hookworm, for instance, or possibly even schistosomiasis in many endemic areas. And so for that reason, what we need is version 2.0. And version 2.0 are what we think are vaccines. And so there's been we've had a lot of interest in developing a new generation of control tools using the vaccine. So we do the best we can with what we have in hand, and now we're going to look at developing vaccines. And for African sleeping sickness and leishmaniasis, we have an equally important problem. So, for instance, with African sleeping sickness, the drug of choice for treating the central nervous system stages of this disease, and it occurs because parasitic trypanosomes cross the blood-brain barrier, is a drug called milarsoprol. What is milarsoprol? The active ingredient is arsenic. So what you essentially do is you arsenic poison your patient, with the idea that hopefully that you arsenic poison the parasitic trypanosome before you arsenic poison the patient. But that doesn't happen all the time. So this drug alone kills 5 to 10% of the people with African sleeping sickness. Imagine bringing your child to a clinic and being told that the child's going to receive a drug that has a 1 in 10 or 1 in 20 chance of dying. So what we've done is to look at not only implementing this rapid impact package, but creating a series of what we call product development partnerships, what I like to call guaranteed money-losing companies. So we've created what I call the Human Hookworm Vaccine Initiative, where we're actually developing a new recombinant hookworm vaccine, which hopefully will be developed for less than $1 a dose. But because there's no commercial market, you can't develop these products in the for-profit sector. The shareholders would object. So we create our guaranteed money-losing company, which are located in laboratories on the campus of George Washington University. If you're ever in Washington, D.C., I invite you to come visit what I sometimes also call the biomedical equivalent of the producers.
But how big an operation are we talking about here?
Well, it's surprising that you you need large funds but not enormous funds. So we are supported entirely by the Sabin Vaccine Institute, which in turn is supported by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. They provided $18 million in 2000 for us to launch the Human Hookworm Vaccine Initiative. We just got refunded this year with 2 grants from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And now we've taken this drug all the way through clinical trials. So it's a new model, the idea that we would work with the FDA, file an investigational new drug application, an IND with the FDA, and do all the things that you do in industry practices in terms of process development, GMP manufacture, quality control, quality assurance, but do it in the nonprofit setting. And I don't know if Victoria Hale is still here, but she's done something very similar with her remarkable Institute for One World Health, where she's now looking at new generations of drugs for leishmaniasis and African sleeping sickness, and there are a couple of others. There's the Drugs for Neglected Disease Initiative in Geneva. And so this is a new paradigm for thinking about how we're going to make the next generation of control tools.
And Dr. Zaramba, one of the things we've talked about a lot today is getting the drugs to the people who need them. And one of the questions we had from the audience is there a general investment in infrastructure that would help address this range of neglected diseases, or do we have to address the individual diseases piecemeal?
I think it's high time we address all the diseases together. What we are doing in Uganda at the moment is twice a year we cut out campaigns, the child survival campaigns of stepping up immunization, providing vitamin A supplementation, deworming of all the children, plus most times their mothers, because they are brought by their mothers, and then addressing the specific diseases. As you have heard, it's a package of them. Where we have sleeping sickness, we provide the treatment for sleeping sickness. Where we have bilharzia, we combine bilharzia at the same sitting. So twice a year in April and October, we have those integrated service deliveries. And I think it's been very beneficial. We have been able to cover quite a number of people. Now, as for investment, we have said we really must invest in the system. Because at the end of the day, it is the same people who are delivering the service.
Can you specify what you mean by that? When you say you want to invest in an integrated system, what exactly are you talking about?
Because if you look at the communities, the same nursing or nursing assistant is the one delivering the services we're expecting in those very poor communities. So if you are to deliver quality service, we must make sure that the nurse is available, she's able to mobilize the community, she's operating, the supplies, drugs, and everything are in place. She's operating from a health unit that is operational, that either can attract people to come in, or she's able to get to the communities for the outreach services. So the entire system of service delivery must be supported, and we must be investing in it to succeed at all.
President Carter, you're almost done with the job on Guinea Worm. And so people here wanted to know what kind of two things. One, are you developing new technologies or treatments for other neglected diseases? And what kind of help does the Carter Center need in that work?
I'd like to respond.
I'm sure, right?
Well, first of all, I think I'm not arguing with Peter, who's an expert, but you have to remember that some of the medicines that he describes just prevent blindness or further problems with, say, lymphatic filariasis or schistosomiasis, and you have to give the medicine every year to prevent further deterioration and blindness. The ivermectin, which we distribute, for instance, you have to give a dose every year to every patient, otherwise they'll eventually go blind. And the same thing applies to lymphatic filariasis or schistosomiasis, rather. You have to give the medicine every year. So what we really need is more research and more commitment to diseases that would get rid of adult worms that are in the body rather than just the microfilaria, microscopic worms that cause the illness. That's one thing. So I would say that the thing that we're doing now is combining a comprehensive approach to all the diseases that afflict an entire state or an entire nation. And that's what the minister was mentioning a while ago. For instance, one big project that we have now is to deal with not only these neglected diseases, but malaria. In the entire nation of Ethiopia, with 75 million people. So our project, in harmony with the Minister of Health and Education in Ethiopia, they have agreed now to furnish 80% of all the bed nets required. We will furnish the others, and the Carter Center will be in charge of making sure that we have bed nets for every home in the entire nation.
Does that suggest putting together what you're saying now and what Dr. Zaranda is saying, that if someone had a couple hundred million dollars to throw around, rather than focus on a disease, would they focus on a country and try to come up with a comprehensive strategy?
That's exactly what the minister just said, and that becomes more and more obvious as you get involved in large countries like Ethiopia with 76 million or in, say, Nigeria with twice as that many people. So remarkably, the government of Ethiopia has now committed themselves to having two bed nets for every home in Ethiopia. And the Carter Center will be responsible for making sure that does that. So these bed nets now can last 7 or 8 years, killing the mosquitoes that land on the bed nets, repelling them. So the mosquitoes treatment will also deal, say, with lymphatic filariasis because mosquitoes carry the same disease. So you're dealing with all the malaria in the entire country and everybody that might have lymphatic filariasis just by putting into bed nets. That's going to cost the Carter Center $15 million that we don't yet have, to answer the other part of your question. So, but at the beginning of the year, we're going to buy these bed nets, which cost roughly $5 each. And so we will be sure that by August of 2007, we have the bed nets to cover every person in every part of Ethiopia that's afflicted or in danger with malaria and or lymphatic filariasis. And that generic approach is one thing. The other one is for the pharmaceutical companies to develop a macro filaria that will kill not just the microscopic worms that cause the symptoms, but get rid of the adult worms that live in large sores in the body that provide a constant stream of microfilaria every year. that has to be done to get rid of these diseases.
I think it's time now for Chris Jennings to come up and present the results of all the work you all have done.
Well, George, another incredibly productive session. I think this time I actually have more nuggets than themes, which means that a lot of individually unique ideas that we think are very much worth highlighting, as well as cross-cutting themes. We always start, as you know, with the themes, so I'll just go quickly through them. I want to thank you all for your participation. First, what was uniformly discussed was that this must be a priority for governments within the developing world, not just the developed. We must consider making advanced purchasing commitments to encourage the development of new drugs. This is the whole idea where if people know they have markets, they might produce more drugs for these neglected diseases. That delivery and distribution is part of the problem. So a lot of the focus tends to be about developing new drugs, but we have to talk about delivery and infrastructure, and most importantly, that we take advantage of that infrastructure that is currently available on the ground, I think as Dr. Zaremba was saying earlier in his presentation. In the second slide, we have a real need that really moves towards communication, which is to talk about how we can demonstrate to local communities and economies how important these diseases are to economic development as well. And, of course, lastly, media, in terms of communication. Communicate about NTDs, about the size of the problem, who's affected, and just as importantly, that a solution does exist, that these are workable, these are treatable diseases and can be done. Now, as for the nuggets that were unique but complementary to the themes, first, we have, again, a discussion to pre-compete and guarantee markets. Again, I think that supplements that first point. Rebrand neglected disease to curable disease. Then it sounds more hopeful. Then it sounds something that you can get done. Thirdly, a percentage of drugs sold in developing countries could help potentially fund the incentives to develop new drugs in these markets that are not going to have much money to pay for these drugs. That NTDs can be, I think this is true, a niche for smaller foundations. In other words, you pick a disease potentially you can actually and push for the eradication. That might be more efficient and more effective than trying to have a broader foundation do everything. And then we examine the potential for non-health corporate partners to support distribution of NTDs. And again, that's just a question. Any volunteers? We're ready to invite you to participate. And lastly, President Carter, there was this request by you and for the President just to call them up, and they might actually respond even more. And this will be your pitch. So I'll conclude with that.
You give me the phone numbers, and I'll call them up. I'm not kidding about that.
We didn't think you were.
We'll get the phone numbers over to this table. I will call tomorrow.
Dr. Hodes, you see what the group came up with. You've been working on this basically your entire adult life. What jumps off the page?
Well, the first two I think are very interesting points. I think the point is, for the first one, was it must be a priority for governments within the developing world, not just the developed. Well, I'd like to say that it really has been a priority for the developing world. This is not simply this global network of implementing the rapid impact packages. It's not just neo-colonialists, but for instance, what we're doing in our network with the Schistosomiasis Control Initiative, which is a partner member of the network, the International Trachoma Initiative, it's not just a bunch of people from Kansas swooping down into sub-Saharan Africa. This is actually being implemented by the local Ministry of Health. And I would cite Dr. Zaremba, what he's done in Uganda is probably a poster child for the opportunity to really make a huge impact. And I'm sure, as Sam could say, that it's his people that are doing the implementation.
Was it difficult to convince your entire government to make it a priority?
See, the biggest problem in the developing world, we are overwhelmed with problems. Now, when you present a bunch of problems and a partner decides to pick on one particular problem, just because the demand is so much, you just cope with them. But neglected diseases are very well known within our government, and most strategic plans that I've seen in the African region actually have neglected diseases as one of their minimum health package that they must deliver to their population. But it's just a question of
money. I saw you nodding your head when we got to the nugget about rebranding the diseases from neglected to curable.
I think quite a number of people I've worked with will know that I have personally not liked this word, neglected diseases. I would be definitely go with curable diseases because they are curable. I mean, and as you have heard, treatment is so simple, very cheap. But for some reason, we have not taken these tools seriously. And I would want everybody to really take it up right from here that we can contribute something to these diseases that are causing so much disability and so much impoverishment. I mean, anybody talking about poverty eradication without talking about neglected diseases has not completed the equation. So please, if ever anybody is looking at alleviating poverty in the developing world, please remember that these diseases must be taken into account.
Thank you. President Carter, do you think that this idea here of making these diseases a niche for smaller companies and foundations is the way to go, or do you think it is something that has to be taken on a larger scale? Obviously, you don't want to have to make that choice, but is the niche there?
I think the niche is there, not just for smaller organizations. For instance, a Merck company has basically adopted onchocerciasis or river blindness as a major commitment of theirs, and they have they came to the Carter Center when they found that this veterinary medicine would work with river blindness, and asked us to develop a protocol or procedure to distribute the medicine that wouldn't interfere with their veterinary medicine. And so Merck has gotten a tremendous amount of publicity, and their people have been inspired because they're actually addressing a particular disease that they can identify. And I think this would work very well with other companies as well. Secondly, the word curable is not exactly accurate because some of these diseases, we don't yet know how to cure them. We know how to delay. We know how to minimize.
Treatable?
Treatable. That's a better word, treatable. And we can cure some of them and prevent them. But others, you have to treat every year because the disease is still in the body, and that's a very serious problem. And the answer to the other question is some times some nations do take the initiative locally. Uganda is a good example because they have a fine minister of health who understands medicine. Ethiopia is another one that's outstanding in every way. But many of the other countries don't treat the diseases seriously because the rich world is just concentrating on HIV, AIDS, and malaria and tuberculosis with a global fund.
So that's how they get the match.
How they get the money. So they neglect these minor diseases. So I think it's very important for the rich world, including WHO and others, to concentrate on these other diseases that cause just as much suffering and maybe affect a wider range of people and are more easily cured, because a lot of countries, ministers respond just to where is the rich world offering us money. And I think it has to work both ways. The problem is, too, that the poorer the country is, the less likely they are even to know about the global fund. You go to the Central African Republic, I've been there, they didn't have a typewriter, and they had no idea that a global fund existed when I went there visiting with Bill Gates Sr. as they were exploring the possibility of doing something about AIDS. So the poorer the country is, the more they need help from the outside world.
If I could just address very quickly the foundation issue. First of all, God bless the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. If it wasn't for them, we would have... I would have still been struggling to undertake process development, much less manufacture and quality control of a vaccine. The problem is we can't keep going to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation forever. We need now some
forever, right?
Well, we do need other foundations to step up. For instance, we now believe we have the technology in hand to develop a new vaccine for schistosomiasis. We're all dressed up and ready to go. We've got the infrastructure to make the vaccine because the infrastructure was paid for by investments from the Gates Foundation. We've got the proteins identified to make the vaccine. We've got everything but the important dollars now to go ahead and make that. And it gets very difficult to continue to go back and back and back to the same foundation. We need some others. And so what we'd like to do is leverage those funds from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and look at other opportunities.
What really we need more players. We need more players to come in and support the other program. As I said, we cannot continue having the same persons. I mean, like President Carter has been at it for a very long time. And indeed, I'm even surprised that other people have not seen it. They have not seen that he's contributing heavily to the alleviation of the suffering of the developing world. So as Peter says, the more people we'll get on board, the better.
I think that is the perfect introduction for Donna Shalala, who's going to join President Carter in accepting the commitments. But first, let me thank Dr. Hotez and Dr. Zaramba for your contribution today. Thank you all very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, Donna Shalala.
Thank you. Let me begin with our first commitment from Victoria Hale, the CEO and founder of One World Health, a nonprofit drug company. 4 years ago, an international women's organization that I belong to asked me to mentor a young scientist who had this idea about a nonprofit drug company. I met Victoria Hale. She didn't need a mentor. She needed someone to tell her she wasn't crazy. This is about what I did. Victoria? Victoria, of course, in One World has developed a new affordable lifetime cure for visceral leishmaniasis using an off-label existing antibiotic. Black fever, for those of you that don't know the scientific term, which is the second largest killer after malaria among the parasitic diseases. Their commitment is to develop a comprehensive medical supply model, initially in one of the most remote areas of the world in rural India, and then to expand to Bangladesh, Nepal, Sudan, Ethiopia, Kenya, and Brazil. We're talking about 500,000 cases, a commitment Mr. President, if you'll make a couple of phone calls of $27.4 million over 5 years. Victoria Hale. Mr. President, may I present George Barrett, the president and CEO of Teva North America, a great Israeli company, a world leader in generics and affordable antibiotics. For 500,000 people in northeastern Brazil, they'll now get antibiotics George and his colleagues will develop effective supply lines and working with NGOs, educate people about lower respiratory diseases. This is a commitment of $5 million over 3 years from a very great Israeli company. Thank you. Lois Quam, CEO of Ovations, a United Health Group company. I should disclose I'm a director of United Health. So wherever she's committed, I'll make sure they double it. Is Derek Yak going to come up too, or just Derek? Derek, of course, is a former WHO executive who ran the campaigns against smoking and junk food. The focus here is on centers of excellence, which Lois has been a leader in to combat chronic diseases. 60% of the deaths in the world are from chronic diseases. We'll be talking about chronic diseases in the next panels. This is a 5-year commitment. I'm sure it's millions of dollars. They're going to start in China and India, where 70% of the deaths are from chronic diseases. And Ovations, a leader in this area, a great private public company, are making a substantial commitment to work in those countries. Lois, congratulations. And finally, will Pierre Lefavre from the World Diabetes Foundation please come up? The commitment is for 3 new projects to treat diabetes in Cape Town, South Africa, including a school-based intervention for youngsters between 10 and 13 focused on type 2 diabetes. It's a commitment over 3 to 4 years for almost $1 million. We'd like to thank the World Diabetes Group. Congratulations. Yeah. Give a big hand to all of these commitments that have been made.